The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And so, you know, if you're going to pumpkin plan your business, you want to develop your sweet spot, which is really three large principles. One of them is discover who your ideal client is. And I never use the word avatar because an avatar refers to like a mythical.
Right. Yeah, no, avatar. I've always liked the ideal client profile.
I work with real people. I don't work with avatars. And so who do you know? Who have you worked with who is like your best favorite top client?
Right.
So use that person as, you know, as your goal to get more of those people.
As close as you can, right? Not everybody's going to fit every criteria.
Absolutely. So, but there's always a thread. There's always a common thread.
Yeah. And there's things that you absolutely under no any circumstances don't want. Right. So.
Yeah. So you want to develop your perfect prospect profile, and you also want to develop your, this is going to be who I absolutely will never work with kind of profile, the opposite. So that's the first part of the Venn diagram. The second part of a sweet spot is your unique value. What are you doing? Yeah. What are you offering that's different than anyone else? You know, how are you working?
Selling proposition, kind of.
Right, you're functioning differently than all the other business attorneys. So it's like who you want to work with, how you're going to work with them, and then the third piece of the sweet spot is a repeatable process, so that you don't want to be stuck being the only person who can possibly work this company because you can't grow.
Right.
You want to be.
Then you're going to be out in the farm every time watering a pumpkin, which is ridiculous.
Yes. Right. You're going to be doing all the work yourself,
and that's how a lot of business owners run their business. They run it. It's all them, and they got
the information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
I'm Susanna Fontecopa. I am a small business consultant. I work with owners who are struggling with decision overload and entrepreneurial exhaustion. I guide them through a proven process to get out of the overwhelm and onto the business of achieving their goals.
All right, Susanna, so let's get on. Now we're on the mic and we're going to talk about all the stuff that you do, and you agreed with some coaxing to come on the podcast with me, which I appreciate very much. And I know you're busy and you're helping me with my business too. We're helping each other.
Absolutely.
But I want to go back because I know part of your story, you started to tell it to me, and you were really in corporate and you thought you were going to be there forever. You didn't think you were going to be an entrepreneur and all this kind of stuff. And this is the accidental entrepreneur. So everybody run into, they're like, that's me. I'm the accidental entrepreneur. So we'll find, someday we'll find out, will the real accidental entrepreneur please stand up? But maybe we go back, like, where, you know, where are you from originally? Where'd you grow up? How did you end up in corporate doing what you're doing? And, you know, take us through the story.
Okay. Well, you want me to go way back. So I am the accidental entrepreneur, but I do have entrepreneurship in my blood. So I was born in Cuba. Okay. And my dad and his father owned an electrical store in Havana. It was a big store. Everybody shopped there. So
he, like a supply store, like you buy electrical.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of like the electrical aisle in Home Depot.
Okay. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, they're very popular. Business went great. So I had I think I have business ownership in my blood, but it was dormant for a while.
Okay.
So, you know, after college, I didn't dream of being a business owner. We were always taught at that time, you know, go find a big company and
we're all
they
taught,
will
right?
take care of you.
Yeah.
For the
magically
rest of your
go
life.
To college. And then you go. When did you come to the United States?
I came to the United States in 1962.
Oh, okay, fine. So you were young. So you were, okay. So you did most of your schooling and everything here.
Yes.
Okay. Did your parents have the store here when they came?
No, like most immigrants, you have to start from scratch. We literally came over with one suitcase for the four of us. So
right.
It wasn't exactly just the clothes on our backs, but close to it. So we came to New York to live with relatives, and you know, my parents took whatever jobs they could find, worked
right.
hard. My sister and I both went through college, and you know, again with the thought of we were going to find a big company that, you know, we were going to retire from when we were old, and we're going to get the gold watch and that whole thing.
Pension.
Put your head down, work hard. You'll be promoted. You'll be given raises. And none of that actually happened.
Right. Well, the world changed. That was the world in the '60s and the '70s, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what did you major in college? Remember when you're.
So my major in college, was English, and my minor was in psychology.
Okay.
And I didn't realize it at the time, obviously, but after many, many years, if you put those two together, you get marketing.
Yeah, that's basically what happened, right?
Right.
That's how you marketing was born.
How people think and express it really well.
Yeah, right.
So I was building myself a foundation even back then when I didn't realize it.
So was you said you were with AT&T. Did you join them out of college? Or was that later on?
No, I worked at an insurance company in Newark for the first 3 years, which no longer exists.
Was it Mutual Benefit Life?
It was.
My father spent his entire career at Mutual Benefit Life.
Get out.
Yeah. And he was I graduated law school like 92. I was supposed to work. I did work there that summer. That was the summer they collapsed. He was number three in the country in sales. Joined them when I don't know. I was born in 66. So he was already maybe 65. He joined the company.
Mm, wow. Yeah. I mean, it was a great company while I worked there.
It was a great company while it lasted. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, so after 3 years, I found a higher paying job at AT&T and, was with them for almost 20 years. I almost reached pension eligibility within seconds of pension eligibility.
Really?
And they're like, oh, she's getting too close. It's time to downsize her. I and 3/4 of my department were all told we were let go on the same day. And we got up and went to the parking lot where somebody had an inkling of what was to happen. And she had brought a cooler full of hot dogs and beer. And we had a cookout in the parking lot while the few employees who stayed behind were not happy about that.
And you said that was like 2003?
That was 2003. That was
so the whole industry had changed a lot by then.
Yeah. And then in the year 2003, a lot of large businesses were laying off. So I was looking for another job, but so was everyone else.
Right. Of course.
And,
you know what happens.
Yeah. And I mentioned before that, you know, at the time I was widowed 3 years. Just 3 years. And so it was a unemployed widow with two children and a mortgage.
How old were the kids?
The kids were, the kids were just, were in like middle school and high school. So.
Right in the thick of things.
Yeah. So a lot of years of schooling ahead of them.
Right. Right. So what do? You're sitting in the parking lot, you're eating a hot dog and beer. Yeah.
So
the rest of your life, right?
Right. And just plan the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it wasn't like you had planned this and you're like, this is the day I'm going to leave. And I made all my plans coming up. Right.
Exactly. So. Yeah. But you know, I had decided right then and there that, well, the whole old fashioned notion of a big company is going to take care of you is clearly not working. And I said, you know, whatever happens to me, I want to make sure that I'm the one in control. I need to take control. I need to set my destiny. I have these two kids to take care of. I can't just go backpacking through Europe for a couple of years to find myself.
You love prey, right?
I can't do that. I have responsibility. And I said, you know, if I get another job at another company, who knows how long they're going to take to decide that department gets laid off. So, and I was in the systems department. So a lot of the systems analysis work that I was doing was getting, you know, farmed overseas.
Oh, that's what happened.
And that's how they were going to save a ton of money.
Right.
So, nobody was hiring. I didn't know what to do. And a friend of mine said, you know, everyone's struggling with their computers. Why don't you be a computer tutor, teach people how to use their computers, you know, and just, you know, there's so many of us who need help and you can make your own money that way. And I said, well, I can do that. And without knowing anything about business, because I never took business in college.
No business, no sales, nothing.
No business, no sales, no management, no economics, nothing. I said, well, you know, that's something I can do. And that's the way I started. I started learning home computing. And in January of 2004, I started my first business and never, ever looked back for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, once you get to that world and, you know, not by choice or whatever, you don't go back. I mean, because you don't want somebody else to control your life. And, you know, economic factors that you have no control over. You're doing a good job. It's nothing to do with that. You didn't get fired because you were bad at what you did. You got fired because the world changed. And yeah, I mean, look, that's, I think, why a large percentage of the population are now entrepreneurs, that we have this whole gig economy and people that are in business. The unfortunate part is that, and some of us are definitely more resourceful than others that we know, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a self-educated process. There's no, you don't graduate from corporate world and go to the University of Entrepreneurship and graduate from there with your degree and books and all the stuff ready to go. It doesn't work that way. So you kind of get thrown in. That's where the name came from for the podcast. But you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm in retrospect, I'm actually glad I never took any business courses because I didn't come into this with any kind of a prejudgment or, you know, a preconception of how it was all going to work. I did learn the hard way. I did learn with boots on the ground. And I'm very grateful to that because that's what led me to meet Mike Michalowicz. He was speaking at a women's business owner conference. And he had just published The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur.
Right, that was his first book, wasn't it?
That was his very first book. And we were completely mesmerized. Yeah. We're like, oh my God, he's speaking our language.
Yeah, very charismatic, easy to understand. It just, he resonates with people. Yeah, that's the book about like bootstrapping, right? Really?
Oh, that book was literally, you know, the first couple of chapters was, you know, it explains why the title is what it is. It's very funny. But
yeah, analogy makes sense, right?
Yeah. And it's like, what do you do when, you know, you have nothing and you have to make it, you have to make something happen no matter what.
Yeah.
And that was, I think that was speaking to my whole life. And then after, you know, after I met him, he kind of got friendly with the whole organization. He started a mastermind group and I joined right away. And I was in his mastermind for a year and a half. I mean, huge learning experience from the master himself, right? And so, you know, I had been developing different, you know, my business. I actually had hired him to be my private coach for a few months. And you know, just again, the entrepreneurial journey along the way. And at a certain time, I realized that the business owners I was helping with their computers and then later their marketing, there was always some other issue that needed to be resolved and they had no idea how to resolve it and they felt frustrated and they were trying to throw different kinds of money at their problem, never really
identified. Because we get no training, that's why.
Because there's no training. No. And so when he came out with the pumpkin plan and then he certified it as an actual business process and a certification course, I'm like, that's it. That's exactly the answer I've been looking for all this time. So I became certified in the pumpkin plan process.
That was the first course. I thought, see, I didn't understand that. I thought Profit First had come out and then they made Profit First professionals. And then they said, oh, let's do this with the pumpkin plan, went backwards. That wasn't the case.
No, pumpkin plan was next. And
okay. That makes sense, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then a couple years after that, he came out with Profit First and I was tempted to be Profit First professional, but I really didn't have the accounting background.
You gotta want to do all. You gotta really love numbers to be a Profit First guy. If you like the creative, you know, helping the business type of stuff that you're doing, it's the pumpkin plan is definitely the way to go. But it's interesting to watch Mike's progression because he's an entrepreneur, so he didn't just write books. Look, there's a lot of people write books, and they're good books. We're reading them in our peer group, and that's fine. They're authors. And Mike is an author, but Mike's also a business person. So he's growing his business, getting his message out in more than just putting a book on a shelf, you know?
The thing about Mike is that, you know, when you've had a chance to meet with him in person and be in his circle for a little while, you realize it's not just about writing books or giving speeches. Like he lives and breathes this and every single entrepreneur's journey and travails out there. He feels it. He's right there with him. It really is his personal mission to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty.
Right.
It's not just some nice words that he uses. He really lives and breathes that. So, that's why the process makes so much sense. And it's very well thought out and it really does work. And I've enjoyed working with people through the pumpkin plan because it really helps you think differently about the business operations, who your clients are, why are you choosing those clients? Why are those clients choosing you?
Right.
What it is you're offering and why.
So. And it's not for, I shouldn't say that. It works for everyone and everyone should do it, but not everybody's willing to put the time in and to think outside the box. That's the unfortunate part of it, you know?
Right. Not everybody wants to do it. And some people are afraid to do things differently. It really does help you think outside the box. And, just the part where you decide to choose your ideal client and then, you know, prune your garden and get rid of everybody else. That's the part that, you know, people have the most resistance to, like, wait a minute, you want me to fire, like,
I got to do business with everybody. Right. Yeah.
Right. It's very friendly. Like, do you know how hard I worked to get those clients in the first place? I'm like, yeah, but how miserable are those people making?
Yeah. Well, that's, I think the fact that you spend a lot of time getting them is irrelevant. It's like when people have a stock and it's bad and the price went down, they go, well, I don't want to sell this guy. I got to wait till it goes up. I go, well, it screwed you once. You're going to, I mean, what's the point?
Right.
You know?
Right. And it's like how many terrible conversations you need to have with the worst clients? How many times are you losing sleep and are you having stress over these discussions you're having with your worst clients? And how much extra work are they making you do without
always
getting
more
paid?
Work. Always more work for the worst clients. It is.
Right.
They demand on your time. They take advantage of it. And then they refer other people that are like them. That's the next
problem.
Exactly.
Isn't that what you want? You want your worst clients to refer other terrible clients to you. I mean,
that's why you got to be real careful about doing things like for favors or at a discount or whatever, because you're going to perpetuate that problem.
Yes.
Not a problem. You're going to perpetuate that income stream. You're going to be perpetually poor.
Well, you're going to be known as the person who will take any kind of business and that is, it's never going to lead to success. It's going to lead to an ulcer.
Yeah.
But it's
look,
never
I suffer
gonna...
from it too. I'm very generous with my time. You know that. I'm always happy to help. I'll work it out. I'll do, but there gets to a point where you can't, I'm better off working, not doing it at all.
Right.
And doing it for such a low price and focusing on other things. But I suffer from it too. You said, you know, we're going to work on that.
Right. And I've helped people say, you know, like once, and this happened to me, it's, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. It's happened to me where I've had a client stop working with me for whatever reason. It's just, they just kind of, you know, reached the end of their road, their journey. I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, and I, you know, you mourn for the lost income for a little bit. And then you're like, you know what, that person, once that person goes away, it leaves room in your time, in your energy, in your headspace, and it opens the door for another better client to come in. So, you know, that is a concept I learned a long time ago, and that's a concept I keep reinforcing with my clients. It's okay to let that person go. Look at how much more time you have to develop and attract a better clientele, people you actually are happy to work with,
right?
And make even more money from.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's a, you know, it's a little bit of a difficult concept for people to accept, but it does work.
I think if you're like in a room and everybody's doing that, you should just do totally the opposite. Generally, what people do in mass is not good. All right. The principles we follow, all the things we're taught, because, you know, the world's constantly changing and our thoughts and concepts and how we deal with things aren't. So, I mean, there's some people, but it's a minority, you know what I mean?
Right. And the more you want to do things exactly the way everybody else does it, then they're just going to, you're opening yourself up to price shopping, and they're just going down that list.
And they're facing, you know, the crowd.
Right, the Google list of like, okay, well, let me call this person. You're $10 an hour, you're $12 an hour, or you're $9. You know, no, right. That's not where you want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think, but it, you, like you said, it's hard. People are trying to pay their bills and they're like, well, I mean, I got to do business with everybody. So they get on to these calls that we're on and they vomit all over everybody in the room trying to, in 30 seconds, you think about this, it's funny, right? In 30 seconds, they're trying to get in everything that they do.
Yes.
It ends up taking 2 minutes, by the way, and everybody's rolling their eyes. And right, because they're afraid that if they skip something, there might be somebody in the room who knows somebody else that could send them that piece of business, and they don't want to miss it out. And then what happens is everybody in the room, nobody remembers what the person does.
You're 150% right. You know, I've seen a lot of people do that. Well, I do this, and I also do this, and I also do this, and I also do this. And like,
Jack of nothing.
Yeah.
What was that thing? I'm not going to mention the person's name. We were emailing about it today. Neither of us have an idea of what the guy does.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And I think you, you know, once you pumpkin plan your business, you become not only different from, you know, from your competitors, but you become so different that people are bound to notice you more than anyone else.
Right.
And so if you're the fractional business and family attorney, well, wait a minute, what is that? You know, and then you are, you know, doing a nice job of explaining it.
Getting there,
plain English, so that people go, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense.
Right.
And if not 100 attorneys just like you are doing the same thing, you're going to stand out and people are going to just naturally want to learn more.
Right. Yeah, that's the challenge in law, right? I'm a business lawyer. So what? There's a lot of business lawyers out there. And I do get business because I network and I'm more in front of people. But like you said, I want to build a practice that is unique, that does the things that I want it to do, that gives me control, as opposed to, you know, just keeping in touch with people and any legal thing that comes through the door I want to handle, you know, and I don't.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're going to pumpkin plan your business, you want to develop your sweet spot, which is really three large principles. One of them is discover who your ideal client is. And I never use the word avatar because an avatar refers to like a mythical.
Right. Yeah, no, avatar. I've always liked the ideal client profile.
I work with real people. I don't work with avatars. And so who do you know? Who have you worked with who is like your best favorite top client?
Right.
So use that person as, you know, as your goal to get more of those people.
As close as you can, right? Not everybody's going to fit every criteria.
Absolutely. So, but there's always a thread. There's always a common thread.
Yeah. And there's things that you absolutely under no any circumstances don't want. Right. So
Yeah. So you want to develop your perfect prospect profile, and you also want to develop your, this is going to be who I absolutely will never work with kind of profile, the opposite. So that's the first part of the Venn diagram. The second part of a sweet spot is your unique value. What are you doing? Yeah. What are you offering that's different than anyone else? You know, how are you working?
Selling proposition, kind of.
Right, you're functioning differently than all the other business attorneys. So it's like who you want to work with, how you're going to work with them, and then the third piece of the sweet spot is a repeatable process, so that you don't want to be stuck being the only person who can possibly work this company because you can't grow.
Right.
You want to be.
Then you're going to be out in the farm every time watering a pumpkin, which is ridiculous.
Yes. Right. You're going to be doing all the work yourself, and
that's how a lot of business owners run their business. They run it it's all them, and they got some help, but at the end of the day, was it Mike that said that they had a? It must have. I don't think it was when I was talking to him. It must have been in Fix This Next, where he had an employee that was so key to the business that if she dropped dead tomorrow, they don't think that the business could run. So they sent her away for a couple of weeks to see if they could figure it out. And she ended up moving up in the company, something like that.
She took a year off.
A linchpin or something. I don't forget the term they used.
Yeah. This person actually went away for a year.
Was it a year?
She went to travel and she taught everybody what how to fill in for her. So everyone was forced to learn how to fill in for her. When she came back, it wasn't like she was no longer needed or
wanted. She moved up, I think, right?
Now moved her up, and she's actually the company president. So, you know, it could be that at some point I may want to hire, you know, bring on some more consultants and to do more of the, you know, consulting work, and I'll find my queen bee role, which is part of clockwork. Another word,
surge or clockwork. I got to read those, but you're right, because then you could choose to do work with people that you want to work with and let everyone else handle the good size, but smaller pumpkins.
Yeah. You want to develop your role as to what can I do that nobody else can do? What is the most key role that I play that nobody could, no one could do? I'm a consultant, but other people can work for me as consultants. So that's not it.
Right.
No. So you're just going to
methodology.
Right.
I mean, besides writing, I think Mike's equipped his business, so he doesn't have to do anything.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and, most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Totally can run without him. He just needs to come up with ideas. And that's really where we want to be, right? You want to be at 30,000 feet dealing with the big issues, which is exactly what he does in his books. And then he doesn't even, isn't the pumpkin plan system and the profit first system, isn't it a licensed system where he has someone else? Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, why would he do it himself? That's crazy.
Right. So the pumpkin plan process, you know, if you wanted to be a pumpkin plan strategist, you would be working with the president of that process, which is Donna Lyons, who's really terrific and, you know, who I work with all the time. And, you know, there's somebody else running Profit First or somebody else running Clockwork. So, you know, it's not just about writing a book. He actually created all these certification processes where he's giving other people jobs. He's employing other people.
Yeah.
And all of our missions are to help all the other entrepreneurs. So we just, you know, it really is necessary because, as you well know, being an entrepreneur is thrilling and terrifying at the same time.
Probably more terrifying than thrilling.
Probably more terrifying than thrilling, but we're crazy and we wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, well, some people don't feel they have a choice. They got, you know, whatever. They left their industry died, they're at a point in their career. I mean, look, I'm an attorney and I like what I do, but I'm not going back getting a job at 55. I mean, nobody's going to hire me because I haven't been in corporate world. And I'm not saying I want to be hired, but, you know, it's just not a world that I'm in. So I got to keep growing my practice and get it back up and running again now that coronavirus is starting to pass. I don't know what the hell's going on with all that stuff, but choosing not to participate in that stuff. I find there's people that are like that. Like they have the right kind of mindset to just not participate in the recession. You know, just not participate in the problems of the world.
Yeah, absolutely right. There are some people who, and that's why I'm creating this program called Build an Unsinkable Business, because there are some people who it doesn't matter whether it's corona, recession, whatever, plague of locusts, whatever happens in the world, you know, something happens and they go, oh, well, it's like Eeyore, right? The Eeyore entrepreneurs. Oh, well, there goes that.
Yep.
Never going to work. You know, that's over.
That's their example.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like what kind of attitude?
Like that's all it took. Right. Exactly.
Right. And so for me, I want to encourage entrepreneurs that there is a way to make their business at least, you know, think and plan about how are all the different ways you can make your business survive anything. And
right.
I mean anything.
No, I think the concept's fantastic. And the better business people that I've known over my lifetime, the one thing they always knew is that nothing will stay the same. There will always be opportunities. There'll be setbacks, whatever. But if you can live in a world that changes and deal with those changes and pivot, although I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, I don't like pivot because if you keep pivoting, you're back to where you started.
That's a good point.
Right. That's a good point. So it's not really pivot. It's adjust and, you know, move with the, it's being, what's the word? Morphogenic instead of morphostatic, right? Not trying to stay on the train tracks and going in the same direction and the whole thing's derailing and you're standing on the side saying, Mitch, we don't use train tracks anymore. And you're like, what? You know, but it's having that mindset to be flexible in thought. Is that the right word?
It absolutely is. And that's why I use the analogy of an unsinkable business, because like, not that I've ever sailed myself in my life, but I know enough to know that when you are sailing, there is something to do with the wind going back and forth and you have to shift and you have to go left and you have to go right or port and starboard or whatever. But you don't sail in a straight line until you get there. You zigzag and you go this way and you go that way. And, you know, if there's a storm over here, you change course. And if there's an iceberg over there, you change course. And I think the best business owners, like you were alluding to earlier, they're the ones we know we're going to have to change. And we're not only saying, okay, we're going to have to change, we're saying, yes.
Yeah, they're accepting of it. Bring it on.
Get to change.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be exciting. I love the concept of embracing the fact that someone's, you know, something out there is telling us, you're not going to do, you know, it's not like you work in the button factory. You're not going to be pressing that same button, you know, every day for the 30 years. You're going to be doing something different. You're going to be evolving. You're going to be resilient. So I find that whole concept exciting.
Yeah, no question about it. And you saw people during the pandemic that really shifted what they're doing. I have a friend who, his name is Mitch too, actually. He's got a manufacturing plant in Newark and he's got, you know, tons of employees that rely on him. And this happened and they make, they embroider things like, well, first of all, they do a lot of like hats for like, you know, like political campaigns. So those died. And then, cause they're made in America, so they all want that. They do bags for the military. I mean, everything was off. And he said, you know what, we're going to change everything that we're doing. And they had the materials, they started making masks and I think gowns or face shields, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They retooled the place. They split up shifts so people weren't together anymore. They had trucks running around to people's houses because a lot of them are seamstresses. They're sewing, picking things up. He said it was hard, but I wanted to keep these people employed. I want to keep the business going. But he's the kind of guy, and he's one of the guys I know, that never even occurred to him, like, oh, what are we going to do? He just said, well, we're going to figure it out. That's all.
Yeah, and here's the key. If you know, it all goes back to the ideal client, is if you know your client well enough, you know that, oh, you know, whether it's a recession or corona, that person's life has changed.
Yeah.
So you need to be in tune with how has their life changed? What are they going through right now? And you need to reach out and connect with all of your best, wonderful clients and say, you know, during this virus, what has been your life like lately? What have you had to change? And you want to really get to know them in depth so that you say, well, it seems like everyone's going in this direction because they've had to. How can my business go in that direction too, to continue to serve them?
Right.
And that's what helps you. That's, you know, the guiding light, the beacon of light should be your best customers. You know, always keep following. How can I serve them? How can I serve them? And, you know, the money comes later. So, you know, I like to lead with what can I do for my clients today? What can I do for my clients tomorrow? And they know I'm sincere. They know I care about them, and the money comes later.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to pay your bills, but I think you just got to get yourself not to focus on that part, because the money's a result of a process. It's not the process. So, you know, as difficult as that is, especially during times like these,
right,
you still got to stay focused on the process that, you know, if you and I made ATM machines, we wouldn't be focusing on the money we put in the machines. We'd be focusing on the money, the machines working. So the money will come out and everybody can pay their bills. But yeah, I think that I love the concept, though. Maybe we can explore it more, because I think it supports what you're doing. And like, where did the concept, because I'm sure it developed a little bit over time, come from? Your thoughts about, okay, you wake up one morning and say, I got to teach people how to build an unsinkable business. Like, where did that come from?
Funny enough, it came this year, but before the virus. So around January, I lost a couple of clients, and I was doing email work. So email marketing work. So I lost a couple of email marketing clients, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, drop in income, panic time. And so I said, you know, at some point in everybody's entrepreneurial career, we're going to experience a financial setback of some kind.
Right.
And then I started thinking, okay, what am I going to do about this? So I just started doing certain things just naturally. I looked at all my expenses. I looked at my revenue. And I went through a process myself to help myself recover. And as I was doing it, I thought, you know, this would make a really good presentation, because, you know, I love to go speaking. And so I put together a presentation called How to Survive a Financial Setback.
Okay.
Or something to that effect. And this was, again, pre-corona.
Right. Yeah. Unless you went to Wuhan, China, you didn't know what it was.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so I was, you know, presenting this topic of how to survive a financial setback. And it was very detailed. Everyone was like, oh, wow, this is like really good information, the way it was organized and everything. Everybody was like taking, you know, back then it was in person, so everyone taking furious notes. And then the virus hit, and I was like, wow, looks like I was ahead of the game.
Right.
And I said, well, what do I, you know, I had that built already. How do I go even further and make it a bigger thing? Because now this is not just a short-term financial setback. This is a bigger concept of how to just stay, not just stay afloat, but how to really, you know, get to your destination safely, no matter what happens. And so the idea just kept building and evolving until I started.
One day you were like, you thought of the concept?
I had the concept. I was trying to think of what to name it. And of course, you know, you're Googling all these different name ideas that you have. And I took the one that wasn't taken yet, and I'm going to trademark it. How to Build an Unsinkable Business is going to be trademarked. So pause off, everybody. I've got it.
Well, you already have the common law trademark because you put it out
there.
So. Yeah. Okay. So have you worked with anybody in that regard? Helping them
on this specific thing?
Yeah.
Not yet. So I'm building a group program. I love the concept of a group program, because I love the group dynamic of hearing other people's feedback, ideas. Sure. It, you know, a lot of this is creative problem solving and creative decision making.
Yeah.
So a group dynamic is just perfect for this. So it's about working through my tools and also working within a dynamic group of peers who are going to who are in it to win it and all for the right reasons. And we have the same sort of mindset. And so they love the fact that they can support someone else because they're receiving support themselves.
And that'll obviously be on Zoom, right? No in person.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going anywhere.
I keep getting asked, well, if we do an in-person meeting, would you come? I go, well, we meet in the basement of your office. I don't know if I'm going to do that. That's a small room. Well, there's a bigger room. I don't know. I think Fred wants us to come back soon, but...
You know, Zoom has pulled so many people together who ordinarily would not have been in the same room. I think destroying all of that and going back to the old fashioned ways is just not a thing. It's not like cars were invented and it was cool, but like, oh, let's just go back to horses.
Right. That's not the case.
You know, like, you know, cars are too expensive. Right. Let's go back to horses. You know, that hasn't happened.
Right.
So it's not that we're not ever going to meet our clients and everything in person. I like to think that, you know, when I take a client out to lunch or out to dinner, that would be in person.
Yeah.
But for me, doing business is going to be over Zoom because it's just more efficient.
Much more efficient. You don't have to travel. You can meet with people back to back. I'm also in groups that I couldn't see these people. They're in like Florida or whatever that I can't see these people if we're not on online
anymore. I've had clients who I've never physically met.
Yeah. But you've seen them online?
You know, we work together on Zoom and we've been working together for over a year, but I've never met them in person. My admin, I've been working, today is my anniversary working with my admin. We've never met in person.
Did you get him or her an anniversary gift?
No, she's the one who said happy anniversary.
I'm like, you're like, what? For what? That's very funny. I think it's a good thing. I think this is a very difficult time for a lot of people. Put the health stuff aside, right? Just the economics and the finances and the disruption of life. And I don't think the kids are really ready for this stuff. College is difficult, but it's definitely connected the world. I mean, look, my son is in his junior year in Indiana, I told you, right? And he's an informatics major, which is all artificial intelligence, big data. Everything's being driven by data and decision-making and things like that.
That's awesome.
I've connected with a lot of companies that want to talk to him. Because of my networking, I just sent him to another company the other day and I got two others that are interested in him and he's in one of the top programs in the country, really just fell into it. He didn't even know what it was. He went there for business and he started learning about this, you know, program and he liked it. So,
well, isn't that the way we've fallen into our business and we've been on a zigzag journey all our lives. And, you know, when I was an English major at Rutgers, I thought I was going to work for a magazine and then here I am instead. So
there you go. But the skills are, life doesn't happen in a straight line. It just doesn't, you know, there's
a lot. And thank God for that because like that would be so boring.
So boring. Yeah. Problems and all the opportunities are a sign of life. But you're right. It takes a certain kind of personality, a certain kind of person that has a certain kind of purview or an outlook of what's going on to say, Even if for a minute they go, they're the kind of people that say, okay, well, what is good about this? Well, what opportunities do I have? You know, am I going to sit around? And I mean, I literally have, I think I was on a meeting with, I forget who it was. And they asked the question, like, how many Zoom meetings do you go to? Now there were people on that call that I knew that I hadn't seen at any meeting. So they're like, I don't know. I went to one last week and one last month. And I was like, well, group meetings or individual meetings? They go, is there a difference? I go, well, I go to like 12 to 15 group meetings a week. And I don't know, one-on-ones, three or four a day at the time when I had no business.
I think you're the undisputed king of Zoom.
Probably. It's amazing I haven't developed any psychological issues. Probably have. I just don't realize it yet. But for March, let's say April, May, and June, I had no business. All of my business owners were closed or worried that they were never going to open. They're not calling their lawyer for some legal problem. They weren't getting chased by the Department of Labor. Right. All these people were home. There was nothing going on. You know, I even had my daughter's dance studio that had something going on that it just stopped. You know, they were dealing with issues and everything just came to a complete halt. Right. And, you know, so I had a lot of time. So I said to myself, what am I going to do? Am I going to sit in this closet? I can't go to my office. I'm in this walk-in closet in my house. Now I'm in my office and didn't know even, like, I hadn't been on Zoom. I don't think I'd ever been on a Zoom call until Corona. And conference calls on telephone are difficult, especially if you have more than one person.
I can't stand them.
Yeah, it's very hard to do. And it's even harder now that we know we have this video thing. So I just found every meeting I could go to. I went from one to the other, meeting other people, and I just went crazy. And it's definitely grown my network. Business is starting to come back. Still slow, but starting to come back. And,
well, you know,
or I could have died underneath the couch in my living room. I don't want to do that. You know?
No, and you brought up a good point earlier, and that is, you know, when we all got, you know, stopped by Corona, and we all just, you know, we all kind of hunkered down and stayed at home. Some people, I don't know, maybe they watch TV all day. I can't conceive of that, but. Most of the business owners I know and my clients and I, we said, okay, what can we get done? This is almost like a blessing in disguise to, you know, not to insult anyone, but for those of us whose family members did not become ill, thank you.
Right.
You know, it's a blessing. And we did a lot of back office work that we've been putting off and putting off and putting off.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got our, you know, our procedure documents done and our branding stuff done and our websites rewritten. And my clients, because I work with people who are, you know, productive, super productive people like me, we said, okay, let's think of all the things we could possibly do now before the doors open again. And then we get stuck in the hamster wheel again. So, you know, we use that time to straighten out our back office stuff.
Right.
And so, you know, putting us in a much better position when, you know, things kind of sort of opened up again.
Yeah. I think there were people that were like, is this ever going to end? Are we going to be like this forever? I'm like, not forever. I mean, it's going to be different. There's no question about it. It's not going to go back to the way it was. We're not going to go back to commuting to work every day. It's just not going to be like that. There'll be commuting days and there'll be not commuting days. And there's going to be some sort of a warning system and they're going to say, viral contagions are at DEFCON 3. Everybody wear their mask for 2 weeks. I mean, that's what it's going to be like. No question about it, because there's going to be other things, right, that come up. And it's not just going to be coronavirus. We're a connected world. And
there will be something else. I mean, there's always something else. It's part of life. And you have to... You have to be prepared. You have to be open-minded. You have to be resilient. You have to be focusing on your client and what was your mission? Why did you start this business? And,
right.
You know, you have your client that you want to serve and you have your mission that you want to serve out. So how do you make that happen? If you can't get on this highway, get on that road. If you can't get on that road, get on the grass, do something. But you know, just stopping and now like, okay, let's all just quit and go home and eat, you know, fried chicken and watch TV or whatever. You know, that doesn't work. We, you know, small business owners, we need to keep the economy going. We are the wheel of the economy. And so we always have to find another way to work, another way to offer different services to the same person or offer the same services to different people. Just find a different way to complete our mission.
Do you have like two or three like recommendations as to what people should think about to build an unsinkable business? Are you at that point?
Yeah. So with your recommendation, I've been doing short videos. They're not out yet, but one of the things they should do is build a resiliency plan, which I don't know that there's too many people, you know, out there today talking about that, but a resiliency plan.
Starting to, like, they know they need to do that.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness, right? Somebody's opening their eyes and you need to start thinking, what are the different ways that I could still offer services to clients? And it's a really creative thinking process. So it's like, can I do the same thing for different people? Can I serve the same people, but do a different thing? Can I do the same thing for the same people, but
in a different way,
you know, provided in a different distribution method. So one of the things is a resiliency plan. And the bigger your plan is, the more you can possibly think, the better, because you'll be better prepared.
Right. Because you don't know what the next challenge is going to be.
You don't. And then kind of partnering with that is your risk management plan, which is something I learned a million years ago in project management. When I got my project management certification, is to develop a risk management plan. Think about every single eventuality that could possibly happen and what can you do to mitigate it. And another, you know, critical piece is your communications plan, which is expect to, beyond traditional marketing, expect to find new and different ways to communicate with the critical people in your business.
Yeah.
Your prospects, your clients, your associates, everybody.
Yeah. Well, governments do that. Well, they're supposed to. They build these plans, like what's going to happen with the school system? What's going to happen with the transit system? What's going to happen with the electrical grid? Right. What's going to happen with the water supply? What happens if this happens and that happens? It's not as big, but it's the same concept, right? Because we got caught with our pants down in March. Most people, unless you're in the infectious disease community, nobody saw this coming.
Right. And the, you know, you brought up a good point where, like, the cities and the local governments and they've had to do this kind of planning ahead. What makes us as entrepreneurs think that we don't have to plan ahead? And what makes us think that, oh, we could just keep doing the same thing forever? Nothing's ever going to change. Well, you know, I had the floor, you know, come out from under me twice in my life, you know, early widow and
the company job.
And then the company, you know, showed me the door. So I kind of learned my lesson there. Like, well, okay, what have we learned today? We've learned that life is going to throw us a curveball at any moment. And we have to stop saying, oh my God, you know, this will, you know, everything's over. This will never work. It's just not a
well,
way.
Well, now you'll worry about it all the time, which is totally a wasted emotion.
No, it's not about worrying about what could happen. It's about trying to keep ahead and saying, okay, well, if and when something does happen, what are
we're
all the ways?
I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll, we can bounce high, you know?
Adjust your sails. Adjust your sails. Exactly. One of these days I'm going to learn how to sail, but not
you right think? Now.
I think it's inevitable.
Maybe. Get you out of that and get you away from coronavirus. You're on the ocean. Just got to stay out of the Caribbean now that we've got all these hurricanes. All right, Susanna. So I appreciate it. We've been on the mic for a long time and you got great things to share. And I look forward to us talking about more of this stuff. If people want to reach out to you, we'll put your contact information in the show notes. I definitely recommend that people read Mike's books, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, definitely The Pumpkin Plan, Profit First, if they want to know how to pay themselves first type of a program. And people can find you, I assume, on LinkedIn and other social media platforms.
Yep. I'm usually hanging out on LinkedIn and my website is clearpathstrategy.com. LinkedIn is where I like to connect because it's a B2B hangout place.
Right. Okay. Well, Susanna, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much
for asking me. And I will see you at our next peer meeting, right?
Absolutely.
Next week. If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.